For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Well, the story of a Tulsa County Reserve deputy charged with manslaughter and the death of an unarmed, restrained black man grew this past week as Sheriff Stanley Glanz held a press conference saying he wouldn't resign, and the deputy, Robert Bates, getting released on bail and allowed to go on vacation in the Bahamas. Still, Ryan, no real protest over this. Does this surprise you?
Well, it doesn't surprise me that the sheriff's not resigning, even though I think that that's what needs to happen to restore trust between the community in Tulsa County and the sheriff's department. You know, again, the sheriff had an opportunity to speak out on any number of these allegations against his department, including falsifying records. And I think that what we're continuing to hear are excuses. And I think one of the most disappointing excuses is why he reassigned the two deputies that used the dehumanizing and callous language as Mr. Harris lay dying on the pavement, telling him to F his breath and to shut the F up. He reassigned them for their own safety. And you know, I'm not saying that these deputies deserve to be in harm's way, but removing them from the Violent Crimes Task Force should have happened long before there was any jeopardy to their safety. It should have happened as a matter of fact. You know, these are two folks that represent the very worst in police practices, and they needed to go. Bob Bates being released on bail, I think that there's more to the story than just the instinctively unjust image of a killer lounging on a beach a mere month after he's taken somebody's life. The real story there, and we've dug into the numbers, is that there are 947 folks in Tulsa County Jail right now that are being held there for nonviolent offenses. I'm not saying that Bates deserves to be there. I'm saying that we need to ask ourselves, if Bates can go to the Bahamas, why do we have 947 folks there with no violent crime charge against them whatsoever?
Neva.
Well, first of all, on the Bates issue, I mean, I think it's interesting that both the DA's office and others involved and the judge had no issue with him taking the vacation. Now, I think it doesn't bode well in terms of public perception when you have a guy that's going to take his family and grandkids to the Bahamas for a month. I think that plays into, you know, probably an imagery that could be very complicating when it comes to a courtroom. But more than that, I think what I found interesting with Sheriff Glanz in his Monday news conference was he brought some points out that I think are really relevant to this whole dialogue. One, he said that the FBI had reviewed the incident and had found no wrongdoing, and he said that also included civil rights violations. So, you know, I think the sheriff was clearly taking umbrage with the fact that his integrity was being challenged personally, and he, I think, went to great lengths to also say that he agreed with the Tulsa County DA on the charges that were filed against Robert Bates. So, you know, I think this is an ongoing story, obviously, with the arraignment and now the preliminary hearing set for July 2nd. It'll still take a lot more headlines before we get to the final resolution on it.
FBI saying that there are no civil rights violations, however, just that doesn't mean that what happened is right in the eyes of society or the law. It just simply means that there are no federal laws violated. And this reminds us, too, that there is a two-tiered justice system in America. Most of the folks that walk into the Tulsa County courthouse or any courthouse in America aren't able to immediately walk out the way that Bob Bates did and go on vacation. And I think that, you know, it reminds us that your skin color and the size of your pocketbook mean a lot in terms of what kind of justice you're going to receive in this country.
But by the same token, we have to, I think, also allow for the fact that he does get his day in court, and so
and he should,
and I'm, and, yeah, and that yeah. process needs to take absolutely. You know, needs to move forward.
I just wish everybody got the same treatment that Bob Bates gets. I want everybody to get the Bob Bates treatment.
The Oklahoma Geological Survey officially links injection wells from drilling to the recent increase of earthquakes in Oklahoma. Neva, do you think this will have any impact on the Republican legislature in the state?
Well, I think it's interesting because it is a clear kind of change in the official skepticism, I guess you could say, that the state government has had overall with the announcement that came out on Tuesday. And I think it, as they begin to talk about embracing more of the scientific consensus, it sets up for, I think, a broader discussion and clearly an effort to bring folks to the table and try to find some real resolution. I mean, there's a great divide here on what the issue is, what the problems are, and how to get to, you know, some good resolution on it. But I think that it's interesting how the website rollout coincided with the survey statement, and it's clear that there's been a lot of back discussion and a lot of work with all of these groups who, you know, I think at the end of the day really would like to see us move forward in a very productive way and not make it so adversarial that nothing gets done.
Ryan.
You know, Representative Corey Williams from Stillwater, one of the communities that's really been rocked by these earthquakes, has called for a moratorium on deep water well injection. And I think that, you know, there's probably more rhetoric behind that than actual movement. There's not going to be a moratorium. But I do think that we need to more quickly and seriously address these issues. You know, the science is in. We know what's happening here. We know what's causing these earthquakes. And we know that we're sitting on the precipice of a much larger, much more destructive earthquake. And so what we've seen is efforts by the legislature to limit the ability of local governments to take action themselves and to put that onus directly on the Corporation Commission. And I think that there's, you know, really two problems with that. First of all, you have a Corporation Commission whose staff has been cut nearly 20% over the last several years. Their ability to go out and regulate this and inspect is severely limited. And two, that makes the job of the oil and gas industry lobbyists that much easier. Rather than having to go and make their case to local governments in the democratic process, they have three individuals that they get to lobby. And that to me seems problematic and will slow down real changes.
And doesn't this make it also harder, if it makes it easier for the lobbyists, it makes it harder for local organization, local people, just people who are, you know, instead of going and going to their city council or their county commissioner, having to come all the way to Oklahoma City, they're in Guymon. They can't come down to Oklahoma City and protest and talk to the corporation. It doesn't make it harder for citizens to get their voice heard?
I think it does, but, you know, let's keep some of this in context. I mean, we're looking at about 15% of the land mass in Oklahoma where these are occurring right now. So I think that it's incumbent upon everyone to make sure that as they make the case of the linkage, that they also, you know, look at the broader issue, just like the Corporation Commission. They cannot, they have to go by their permitting. They can't do a moratorium. So if the legislature chooses to be more friendly to the energy industry, I mean, that certainly is something that the people can, you know, take a look at and decide whether they support those folks that they're electing and sending to the state capitol. But the bigger issue is not to just throw the gauntlet down and say that we just have to make this massive sweep one direction or the other. And I think that's where both points of view need to come to the table and find out a way to systematically go about this. We're not the only state that's facing this. And so I think we have to be very judicious in our approach.
The right to farm legislation moves a step closer to going to the ballot. Supporters say it protects farmers and ranchers, but opponents say it gives permission to abuse animals and pollute the environment. Ryan, what are your thoughts on this measure?
Well, there's already a right to farm in Oklahoma. Yeah, the idea of placing this in the Constitution and the real language here is that any regulations on agricultural business in the state of Oklahoma or industry have to meet this compelling interest test, which I think for most Oklahomans that aren't lawyers, the compelling interest test is the highest threshold that a court has to satisfy before it can overturn or accept some sort of a regulation. So the ability to regulate the agriculture business in Oklahoma, it will be almost impossible if this passes, and will give huge free rein not only to people that are out there, you know, that are good actors, you know, especially these family farms that have been around for almost a century or over a century in some cases in Oklahoma, but to these big corporate actors that oftentimes don't even live in Oklahoma, their ability to come in here and create severe harm not only to animals but to the environment, and our inability as a state to address that, I think it makes this a very troubling state question that the people of Oklahoma are going to have to deal with.
Neva, when this was being passed in Missouri, I seem to recall the energy industry got involved as well, because there was some kind of, you know, there was a possibility that basically you couldn't allow the energy industry to come in. Why are we not hearing anything from them right there?
Well, I think they've got their own fish to fry on other issues and probably going to let the Oklahoma Farm Bureau, who clearly are taking the lead in this measure. And I think it's interesting, the major group, I guess you could say, opposing this measure is the Humane Society of the United States. So to me, this, I think Senator Schultz said it very well when he said that this is not a solution looking for a problem. I mean, his argument was counter to what Ryan was mentioning, which was the other side of the debate on that we already have everything in place and we don't really need this type of legislation. But he made some good points, and I think that number one is that it is indisputable that agriculture across the country is under attack. And it's not really even about folks who care about the welfare of animals. It's really about people trying to make political statements and also trying to prohibit farmers and ranchers and the ag industry in general from being able to just routinely conduct their business. They want to impose some fairly outrageous ideas on them, and it's not going to work. And I think certainly in Oklahoma, when we talk about the impact of the energy industry, we're still an ag state too. And I think the lawmakers that come to the Capitol clearly are going to hear that message.
Which is, I think is exactly why we don't need this, though. I think that if you look at the legislators that are in the legislature right now and will probably be there in 10 or 20 years from now, we're going to be electing ag-friendly legislators. So the idea that we're going to have crazy regulation that comes in and shuts down the ability of people to farm either at a massive level or at a local level just doesn't exist. I think that we've got that fail-safe in our legislature and our local governments.
Well,
so to put this in there and make it impossible for the legislature or nearly impossible for the legislature to step up and address some sort of a crisis in the future to me seems irresponsible.
But ultimately, they're kicking it to the people, and it would go to a vote of the people, which would make for, I think, a very interesting proposition.
Meanwhile, another seemingly conservative bill to create a constitutional convention for the United States Constitution gets shot down. Several Republicans voted against this measure in the House. Neva, what happened?
Well, I mean, there's a real divide among Republicans on this issue. I mean, some would say it's the right versus the far, far right. I mean, There are two schools of thought. I mean, the one that this would be a way to go about doing something to limit government and try to get the federal budget under control by reining it in constitutionally. The other side is that there's no precedent for this. There's no recent precedent, and that that by doing it, you basically open the barn door and there is no way to control or limit what the discussion would be. And I think for the folks, the Republicans that voted against it, that's where they are. I mean, obviously, Senator Coburn and others have been forceful advocates for years that this is the direction the country needs to go. And there have been 25 states that have already weighed in on this and are favorable to it. But it'll be interesting to see in Oklahoma because it's a really good debate, I think, going on at the Capitol.
Certainly, Ryan, if they were to have a constitutional convention, you could have a whole bunch of people come in and get rid of the Second Amendment, get rid of right of privacy. There's a lot of bills that are amendments that could just be removed if you have a constitutional convention.
Absolutely. Yeah. As somebody who is a student of the Constitution, there are certainly things that I would like to add to the Constitution. But would a constitutional convention be the right way to do that? I just don't think so. I think that if people are driving right now, brace yourselves while you're listening to this. I agree with Representative Ritz, Representative Mike Ritz, one of the most conservative members of the Oklahoma legislature. Whenever he talks about the inability to control what this convention would ultimately consider. Neva's right. There's no recent precedent for this. The real precedent for this is the convention that threw
that's
out
right.
the Articles
that's
of Confederation
right.
all, and threw them all out,
threw
right.
them all out
yeah,
and
right.
started over again. Yeah. And that could happen with any convention that we start right now. There's no real way to legally limit what they consider. But consider the difference between that convention that took place in the 18th century and the one that would take place in 2016, 2018, whenever, and the amount of money that would play in that convention. I think that it would be not a constitution of ideas that were brought about through consensus of some of the most brilliant minds of our time. It would really be an ad campaign that would be waged at a billion-dollar-plus level.
A Second Amendment battle over the Norman Music Festival gets answered in court. Judge Thad Balkman says the city can't restrict people from bringing weapons into the festival. Ryan, what are your thoughts on this ruling?
I've been looking at the Oklahoma Self-Defense Act, and it seems to me that there are many avenues that there are many pieces of that act that would seem to allow both the organizers of the event of the Norman Music Festival and the city of Norman to place these reasonable restrictions on the ability to walk into this festival with firearms. Their justification for doing so to me seems well-founded. You have an event where you're going to have alcohol involved. You're going to have a lot of people in one area. There seems to be adequate justification there. And you know, for the Second Amendment absolutist out there, in reading the Self-Defense Act, I began to wonder, why didn't they oppose this regulatory scheme to begin with? Because if you read that act, all it is a list, or not all it is, but it's largely a list of places where you cannot carry firearms, who can carry firearms, what kind of firearms you can carry, what kind of ammunition you can have in those firearms. So if the Second Amendment is supposed to be this absolute law, how is it that the state of Oklahoma took it upon itself to pass all of these very reasonable restrictions on who can carry and when?
Neva.
Well, I think, first of all, history repeats itself. 5 years ago, I read an article that the city of Royal Oak, Michigan, had a very similar incident with the festival and this very issue of carrying guns. And it was interesting. The court ruled very similar to what we see now in Norman, and all of the opponents to the folks being able to carry their guns if they chose to, you know, said this thing will collapse the festival. It will be a disaster. I mean, all the arguments that some of the folks in Norman have made on that side, and what really wound up being true is that it's become a larger and larger festival year after year. And really, one of the I think best arguments was that it, rather than making it an empowerment zone for crime, which a lot of people felt like it was moving that direction, it did the counter. And so there were families there. I mean, all these arguments that it's just not safe, I think, are bogus. And I think the other thing is that Judge Balkman also, in his ruling, made it pretty clear that the Second Amendment Association, I mean, that their point of it violated both state and federal law as an infringement on people's constitutional rights was clear. So I think, you know, the judge, I mean, there's some political statements in all of this, but I think it's also a clear indication of where, you know, where he is on this ruling.
And Judge Balkman also said that the businesses who are involved can still say they don't want guns in
their
property.
Right.
And I think that if you look at the state law, the business exemption, doesn't just cover areas of the business, it covers areas under their control. And that's where I think that under the Norman Music Festival and their ability to exert control over that entire area, I think that under the Oklahoma Self-Defense Act, they have a strong argument that they should be entitled to limit who can walk in and out with guns.
In and out of establishments versus the streets and sidewalks and the outside, I think, is one of the
But they're exerting control over that area, and I think that's kind of the language of the statute.
But the city controls the whole thing, and the festival, and since this festival, the city would be liable if there was any kind of accident. Is there concern?
Well, maybe not.
This festival, maybe not.
But other
maybe
not.
Festivals.
I think the Oklahoma Self-Defense Act creates immunity. I think the Oklahoma Self-Defense Act creates immunity. So even if there were an instance of, you know, someone, you know, shooting a firearm because they're out there consuming a bunch of beer and you know, got really excited by one of the bands or, you know, something, right? I don't think that you could hold the city liable.
Okay. Good deal. Okay, so finally, it's April 24th and the Apple Watch is coming out today. Are either of you thinking about getting it?
I'm going back and forth. It's you know, I have a lot of tough issues on my table. This is a pretty big one.
I always wait for the second generation to come out and they work
out all
adopter. The bugs.
I'm saying, you know, I say that early on. Best intentions, I'm waiting for the second generation, but I'm an early adopter.
It's just too exciting. Fantastic. Ryan and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.